everyone, and welcome to the Vookcast, Australia's Nintendo podcast. I'm Angelo Valdivia, and with me this week are Chris Button.
Hello, thanks for having me on, Angelo.
No worries, thanks for being here. And Oliver Brandt.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be back.
Welcome, guys. We've got a great episode lined up this week, all about the huge Animal Crossing Direct, how Untitled Goose Game continues to steal everyone's hearts, some developments over the Pokemon Sword and Shield leaks late last year. But first, the second Fighter Pass for Smash Ultimate will be its last set of character DLC for the game. So, not too long ago, it was announced. Was it in a Direct or was it? It was in some sort of a Smash Direct or something, wasn't it?
That it was. It was at the end of the Byleth announcement.
That's right. Yeah, and that was only a few weeks ago or so that there was going to be a second set of Smash Ultimate fighters that were going to be released between now and the end of 2021. But it seems that once those fighters are out, then that's it. There are no more coming to Smash, which is kind of interesting in a way. I mean, the Switch still has a good few years left to it. You know, Smash Ultimate's turned out to be a pretty solid platform in terms of, you know, being a fighter that's supposed to, you know, last throughout a console's generation. But yeah, it seems to be that's going to be the time that Nintendo's kind of done with new characters and stuff. But, you know, do we think that there might be some new stages or anything, or any other sort of DLC that would be coming for the game? Anyone want to jump in?
I mean, like, as I've mentioned in the past, like, there's a prime opportunity for, you know, things like Echo Fighters that, like, don't require as much work. But, I mean, like, all we've seen so far is the stuff that comes with new fighters. So it's a little hard to say, like, you know, we could see this or we could see that, because, like, you know, this is just getting so much post-launch support and it's all been sort of in one form.
Mm. Yeah, fair enough. Chris, do you have any thoughts or opinions?
Yeah, I think, obviously, with Smash Ultimate, there's already so much stuff in there that I think, you know, with the second wave of fighter DLC, you know, I think we're pretty spoiled for the amount of content there's been. But as for your point, Angelo, about, you know, there's not going to be another Smash, well, for who knows how long, you know, perhaps, you know, for the foreseeable future. But, you know, as for lasting sort of the rest of the Switch's lifespan, I think there's still plenty of, you know, content for people to play, you know, even once the second wave of DLC has landed. And, you know, I think it'll still be propped up by the hardcore competitive scene, and it'll still be a go-to multiplayer game. I think Splatoon 2 has still remained very popular among its, you know, core group of fans, even though they've finished with the Splatfests or whatever they're called again. I can't remember. But, yeah, I think, you know, it'll... I don't think Smash is going anywhere anytime soon, even once the content finishes up.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, well, the news comes from Masahiro Sakurai's weekly column in Famitsu, where he goes on to say that all six characters for the new Fighter Pass have been chosen. Obviously, they haven't been announced. So, that makes it six characters for this new DLC, Fighter Pass that we already knew about. And there were also the six fighters that came post Smash Ultimate's release. So there were five in the Fighter Pass plus Piranha Plant that came as an added bonus for people who bought the game early. So then that means that there are 12 characters that were added post-game to an already exhaustive list of Smash characters. So this would put it up to like 80-something, like mid-80s thereabouts, something like that, like maybe 85 or something. I can't even remember off the top of my head how many characters are added. There's just so bloody many.
It's an insane number. And like, I don't think we'll ever really see a fighting game quite at the scale anytime in the future, because, like, I mean, really what they've done here is they've pulled off the impossible. Like, we have, you know, at least four of the characters in the Fighter Pass were previously thought to be impossible to be in a Smash Bros. Game. And like, there's still like six more characters to come that really could be from anywhere. So just the fact that, you know, we're already into this gigantic game and like there's still, you know, a year and a half or more of characters that could be really anything is just kind of incredible.
Yeah, and what's interesting to me is that as noted in the article that Sakura wrote, all six fighters have been chosen. That means that if there were any sort of, you know, cross-platform deals, like say if there's a Master Chief or whatever, they've already been locked down at this point. You'd surmise from that sort of announcement. So say if Master Chief becomes the last released character, he doesn't come till, you know, late next year, you know, December or something like that, whenever the fighter comes out. That's quite a lead time to have that. And I guess that's also quite a lead time to really work on fine-tuning those characters. You know, obviously characters get fine-tuning, you know, in balances and things like that in updates. But I think it's really interesting that they've confidently said that all six fighters have been chosen at this point, and we have 2 years to get them right, essentially.
I mean, yeah, that's the other thing, is that, like, it could be from, you know, franchises that, you know, haven't come to Switch yet and will in the future. It could be from games that haven't even been announced yet.
Yeah, that's a good point as well. We still have a whole new generation to start at the end of this year.
Yeah, so, like, there's so much on the table right now, and it'll be interesting to see how they follow through with that, like, whether they'll go with these big, you know, seemingly impossible characters again, or whether they're going to bring it more in-house, and we'll see, you know, like, a Pokemon rep and, you know, maybe a couple other things. Like, it's interesting to see what direction they'll go in.
And then Angelo, I think you've nailed it on the head that pretty well, once the fighters come out, probably for the rest of the Switch's lifespan and Smash Ultimate's lifespan, they'll probably just spend the rest of the time, you know, fine tuning and balancing characters, and that'll probably, you know, rely on the competitive scene as well. That may inform, you know, what characters get some, you know, buffs and nerfs and that sort of stuff. So, but I think, yeah, the fact that they do take so long in between introducing new characters, I think they, more often than not, they get it right first time in most cases anyway.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting for sure. And, you know, obviously we won't know anything until the fighters start getting announced, and who knows when even the first one will get announced at this point. But moving on, so Untitled Goose Game, you know, the overall fan favorite of many people last year. You know, it was highly regarded by us here at Vooks. I got to review the game. I was very, very pleased with it. Really enjoyed it. The game has actually received the Game of the Year at this year's DICE Awards, which were just like last week or something like that. So the DICE Awards are the developer voted on awards. So it's an industry award, not, you know, something like the Game Awards, which is done by media or anything like that. These are all people working within the industry who have voted for this game to be winner of Game of the Year, which is quite an accolade for a very small team of developers, you know, based out in Melbourne. You know, I think House, the developer, is only like four or five people. So very, very small, but really huge news to come out of something like that. Yeah, games that have also won the DICE Game of the Year Award in previous years have been GoldenEye 007 for N64, Half-Life 2, Breath of the Wild, Ocarina of Time. So, you know, to be up there among those really highly regarded games is something really, really special. What about you guys? How do you feel about Untitled Goose Game winning the award, and do you feel that it was justly deserved?
I mean, like, when you think about the games of 2019, I don't think anything really had as big an impact as Untitled Goose Game did. I mean, it was impossible, you know, in the months leading up to launch and even in the months since, to really scroll through your Twitter feed without seeing something related to the goose. But I do just want to point out that, like, it's kind of a gigantic feat for, as you said, like a small indie game from Melbourne, because, like, it is the first indie game ever to win Game of the Year at DICE Awards, and if the first Australian game as well, which is just
very good point.
It's huge. And I mean, yeah, it was a fantastic game, and I think it's completely deserved.
Yeah, 100% agreed. And just to touch on, that is phenomenal company for Untitled Goose Game to be in when you list off, you know, previous winners of the Game of the Year at the DICE Awards. But when you look back on the games that released in 2019, there were some, you know, pretty big games that garnered a lot of attention, such as Control.
That's Death personally Stranding. My favorite. I really enjoyed Untitled Goose Game, but I feel like Control was definitely my choice of the year. But yeah, please go on.
Yeah, yeah, and I think Control was one that was tipped as, you know, being a hot contender, and a lot of people, you know, really, really liked that. And which, you know, just a, you know, slight tangent, you know, it probably didn't sell super well on release, mainly because its name isn't, you know, is a search engine nightmare. But with Untitled Goose Game, no other game in 2019, or arguably for years prior, has captured such a cultural zeitgeist, you know, like Untitled Goose Game has, because not only has it permeated the games community and people who traditionally play games and see themselves as, you know, in quotes, gamers, but also just wider popular culture and in, you know, totally non-games related memes. And even last year when there were international climate protests and that sort of thing, you saw people in different countries. I remember in British climate protests, people were holding up signs that were themed on Untitled Goose Game and that sort of stuff. And so it's just crazy that the cultural impact that Untitled Goose Game has had. And, you know, it's such a well-made game. It's so delightful to play. But I think arguably its cultural impact, you know, far surpasses anything else from the last few years, which probably in itself is deserving of such recognition. So, yeah, congrats to House and everyone involved with that. And I think the publishers Panic? I can't quite remember, but yeah.
Yep,
and one more thing, Angelo, don't sell yourself short. Let's remind ourselves that Vooks published the first ever review of Untitled Goose Game.
Yes, we did.
We were a worldwide exclusive because we were not beholden by any embargo. So you published that review, I think, before it was even available in some regions.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's right. You know, given time zones and things, yeah. We behind the curtain a little bit, we did struggle to get review code at the time, despite some contact that we've made and things like that. So when it came to release, I was up early that morning. I'm like, oh, screw it, I'll just buy the game. And then I thought, oh, I could totally review this game. Like, why not? The game is out. I bought it. I'm therefore not beholden to any embargo because people in the US, I think the embargo was at US time, which meant that it would have been like 18 hours behind here. So I managed to finish the game within a couple of hours, not very long, wrote the review within an hour after that, and then it was up later that afternoon. So yeah, we had a lead time of what, maybe 8 or 9 hours ahead of the embargo or something like that. So yeah, that was a pretty good day.
It's quite yeah. And that was a, yeah. And that was an all hands on deck situation as well. I mean, like when you said, yes, that you wanted to review it, we were just like, holy crap, we have to get our stuff into gear right now. So like had, you know, Vuk creating art and getting screenshots ready, and like I was frantically trying to get it into the editor in time. And I mean, it came out wonderfully in the end and was really well received, but yeah, it was memorable, really, for that alone.
That was a very fun day. That's right. And we even got, you know, the top bill on Metacritic for it. Like I think it was Metacritic. Yeah. They retweeted our review and everything like that. So that just drew in heaps of traffic as well. So yeah, that was a very good fun day. That was very good.
Yes.
Just to give perspective on who else also won the DICE Game of the Year award in the last 5 years. So 2018 was God of War for PS4. 2017 was Breath of the Wild. 2016 was Overwatch. 2015 was Fallout 4. And 2014 was Dragon Age Inquisition. So some very big, expensive games. And yeah, there's this little memeable indie game, Untitled Goose Game, completely stole the top spot, which is really, really good news. Moving on to some relatively unhappy news, in a way. Nintendo has basically named and shamed a Nintendo fan site for leaking Pokemon Sword and Shield footage and information and things like that before the review embargo had lifted late last year when the game was released. So if people remember, in the weeks leading up to Pokemon Sword and Shield's release, there was a lot of discussion about, you know, not the full Pokedex being available in the game, animations, you know, supposedly looking really janky and low res, reused character models, all those kinds of things, all this kind of discourse that was in the lead up to the game, and much of it was released in leaked footage and things like that. And Nintendo has pointed the finger at somewhat, at least, to a Portuguese outlet called F Nintendo, which is a regrettably apt name at this point, for one of their reviewers who got their hands on the game early and just decided to break embargo and release a whole bunch of news that wasn't supposed to be released. So this is the full statement from Nintendo. In early November, Nintendo identified a number of photographs taken from gameplay that revealed multiple new and unannounced Pokemon from Pokemon Sword and Pokemon Shield. These photographs had been posted online and Nintendo, together with the Pokemon Company, quickly identified the person responsible for these leaks and took immediate action. These Pokemon were leaked by a reviewer for the Portuguese website F Nintendo, who had received an early copy of the game for review purposes. Both he and F Nintendo failed to handle confidential material, resulting in a clear breach of the confidentiality agreement between Nintendo and the media outlet. As a result, Nintendo will no longer work with F Nintendo. So it's kind of an unprecedented situation because, as far as we know, Nintendo has never really made a public statement like this where they've singled out an outlet and really dragged into the mud like this. So it's kind of a worry as well. Obviously Bethesda has had issues with releasing review copies of games prior to release. There was that whole discussion that happened a few years ago where they said that they wouldn't be releasing pre-release copies of the games to the press, and that reviews would have to be, taken from the day of release, which, would make it really hard for outlets to actually review games around the time of release. Therefore, reviews weren't coming out till a week or weeks after the game had released, which is interesting when trying to inform people about whether or not they should purchase a game. So people are worried this may lead to a similar sort of situation here where not enough outlets will actually receive review copies and things. But what do you guys think about something like this? I mean, do you think sites like us would be affected by something like this?
I mean, you could argue that we kind of already have. After, the Sword and Shield leaks started happening, Nintendo basically put a hold on all review copies, so none were sent out. I mean, we ended up reviewing from a purchased copy just because we have the luxury of living in Australia. But I mean, it still wasn't exactly a great time, like having to, because, a little bit behind the scenes here, but Nintendo did offer us a copy of the game with the stipulation that we don't receive the game until after it's launched. And obviously, it's a 9-to-5 company, so that was 9 hours between release and when we could potentially get the code that, we were sort of missing out on. So, we took it upon ourselves to buy copies, and it's kind of, I totally understand where Nintendo's coming from here, because like that was a huge blow to them. And like, it obviously it messes up, marketing things that they've spent hundreds of millions of dollars on. But I mean, like ultimately reviewers more than anything else, I mean, I know me at least, like, I just want to make sure that our readers are informed and they have the best opinion possible going into the experience, so that they're not wasting their money and they're not, being blindsided by particular aspects of a game. So, us having to sort of, not necessarily rush, but sort of speed through the game. And like, I don't think I slept in between when the game came out and when the review came out, because like, it was such a large game and there was so much interest in it that like the sooner we got our review out, kind of the better. And I mean, we've seen, Nintendo be a bit protective of Pokemon in the past as well. So like when Pokemon X and Y leaked a little bit early, Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire came out a week later in Europe, because like the leaks primarily came from Europe. So it's hard to say what they're going to do in the future, but like it's not a fun situation for anyone involved. And I feel for F Nintendo as well, because like from their statement, it kind of seems like they didn't really have any control over it, and the reviewer sort of went rogue, I guess. And now, they've got an 11-year working relationship with Nintendo of Portugal, and that's all just down the drain. They can never do that again. It's a regrettable situation, basically, for everyone involved. I mean, reviewers probably aren't going to get early access to these games anymore, which means that, you know, readers won't get reviews and everyone kind of misses out when this kind of stuff happens. So,
yeah, yeah. Chris, your thoughts?
Yeah, firstly, Ollie, I hope you slept for 24 hours after you finished that review.
Oh, yeah, goodness. I did.
Got to look after yourself. But the thing I find most interesting is about some of the comparisons you made, Angelo, where you mentioned how Bethesda's, you know, obviously a pretty significant publisher slash developer, you know, how they've approached review copies and coverage and that sort of stuff in recent years, which I think largely stemmed from Jason Schreier from Kotaku, you know, managing to get scoops and early access, or not early access as such, but, you know, announcing things before they were meant to be announced by the publisher and that sort of stuff. So I think Bethesda sort of blacklisted Kotaku and that sort of thing. And then, of course, they, you know, announced about the post-release access to review codes and review copies of games and that sort of thing. But the interesting thing I find from Nintendo's perspective is that, yes, Nintendo are a very secretive sort of company. They're very protective of their IP, and they're very protective of when information comes out and how their games are presented and that sort of thing. But the difference between Nintendo and Bethesda is that Bethesda have really lent into what a lot of the big publishers are doing at the moment in terms of foregoing lots of review coverage in favor of influencer management and getting their games into hands of content creators, YouTubers, streamers, and that sort of stuff, and getting that sort of coverage, which is less editorialized and more a case of, you know, it gives them a little bit more control over the messaging and sort of, you know, a lot of the content creators will tend to be a bit more positive in their coverage of the game. But with Nintendo, it's that, correct me if I'm wrong, or, you know, feel free to point out if I'm missing anything here, but Nintendo don't do heaps in the way of influencer relations. Is that accurate?
Not so much anymore.
Yeah, from what I understand, I mean, there was always a bit of a tumultuous relationship with sort of people on YouTube and things like that. Anyways, I mean, even with Nintendo being okay with people using their footage, that's only been like a relatively recent thing, like the last few years. I remember they were taking down a lot of YouTube videos and things who were using footage and music from their games. So I think they have a particularly... they've relaxed on it now, but I don't think they have a particularly vested interest in social media performers.
I think part of that as well is just because, like, they do have sort of their in-house content creation departments. So that, that's like true. Nintendo of America has, you know, Treehouse, and they've got, you know, videos coming up, you know, every other day. And even Nintendo Australia has been sort of starting to get into that kind of thing lately. So, I mean, they don't really rely so much on influencers because they're kind of their own influencers in a way.
Yeah, they've been ahead of the curve on releasing their own, you know, videos and things like that since like 2011 with the directs anyway. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I suppose that's the most interesting comparison I see between Nintendo and, you know, other publishers is that, yeah, their sort of reasoning for, you know, being stricter with review copies and embargoes and that sort of stuff is mainly because of, you know, they're very particular about their, you know, their internal messaging or keeping things in-house as opposed to putting it in the hands of content creators and reviewers and that sort of thing. So, yeah, interesting times ahead to see, you know, what's, say, you know, what the actions of, you know, one reviewer with Pokemon Sword and Shield, you know, whether that will have a tangible impact on the way that they distribute Animal Crossing New Horizons.
Yeah, I guess, you know, one person can make a difference. Anyone who disbelieves that has never pissed off Nintendo.
Yes.
All right. Moving on. Now getting into the real meat of this episode. Animal Crossing New Horizons just had a direct a couple of days ago. Half an hour of just all sorts of stuff that's going on with this game. Really, really interesting to see some new things happening here, some obvious improvements from previous entries of the games, But, you know, Nintendo being Nintendo and being the immovable object in some regards. We've got a list here of a whole bunch of stuff, but otherwise, you know, we won't be running through everything in this list because it's quite exhaustive. But do check out the Nintendo Direct if you have some time. Anyway, it's about half an hour long. And it's actually very kind of cutely done. I really enjoyed the presentation of it. It was more like an advertisement by, you know, Tom Nook's little travel agency, which is really quite cute. So let's just start running down the list here. We've got, first up, the March 20 release. So the game comes out in just under a month. You can choose which hemispheres to live on. So whether the Northern Hemisphere or the Southern Hemisphere, which affects, you know, the seasons and different times of the year and when events might happen. But I do have to say, one of the things that I noticed right off the bat were the trendy new haircuts. So, you know, I don't know what I was going to say there. Just me being a weird dude. I've always noticed like haircuts and hairstyles in video games, particularly male ones. And in the original the previous Animal Crossing games, you know, I've always thought they were kind of bland and just kind of meh. So I always used to wear hats and things like that, just funny hats. But now we've actually got trendy haircuts, which I think is very interesting. And I mean, like, you know, shaved sides, long tops, all that kind of stuff, which I thought was kind of funny.
Just on that note, there is the ability to unlock other haircuts, which we'll get to in a later point in this list.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So first of all, the most important thing, though, is that so you do start off in a deserted island. It's not an island that's completely already established like previous games, how you move into a town and, you know, things might be a little bit of a shambles because the mayor has decided to leave or whatever, and you're left picking up the mess. But in this game, the island is completely empty, apart from a resident services building and an airport. So at the resident services, you know, this is where you go to buy resources, sell unwanted items, and craft or customize tools. So, you know, instead of having to buy a shovel or anything like that, you would have to craft it, or an axe or a pole vault to, you know, leap over rivers and things like that, which is one of the quality of life improvements that I think is really, really useful. But in previous games, it's kind of annoying to have to, you know, always have to walk around a winding river, but now you can just leap right over it if you have a pole. Which is really useful. And then the airport as well, which is your transport hub for multiplayer travel. So leaving your island or inviting guests over to your island. So you can have up to 8 players in a single session over online, which I think is kind of interesting. It's quite a lot of people to have in there. When it comes to local play, though, local play can only have up to 4 people on the island, and those people will live on your island. Like if you have 4 people in a family who are playing on one Switch console, then they all live on that same island. They don't have their own private islands or anything like that. It's one island per system, as we discussed in a previous episode. And both services are available 24/7, so, you know, they're not closed at 4 a.m. If you're up at 3 or 4 a.m. playing Animal Crossing, you can do all the things you need to do. Ollie, you've got
not
the,
if when
oh when yes when we're up at 3 a.m. Ollie, you've got the next point.
Do I?
The oh, maybe, no, I maybe think that's, I think that's me.
Sorry, yeah. I got the colors wrong. My bad.
Trying to steal my thunder, Android.
I'm sorry.
It's actually a little bit silly because I think the two of you will be getting quite excited about, you know, here's some, you know, really cool quality of life features and that sort of stuff. Whereas me, I'm more wanting to talk about some of the dumb stuff I saw on the internet about this. So. So one thing that's pretty cool is players are given a Nook phone to navigate the game, which I think is, you know, obviously plenty of games have used phones as sort of a makeshift menu in the past, but as with everything Animal Crossing, it's, you know, so cutely designed and, you know, has a very unique style that fits with the game, so it's, you know, quite cool. So it'll include apps on it, such as a map or even a rescue service, which will airlift you back to your house when or if you get lost. So, you know, that sort of indicates that, you know, the islands are relatively big enough that you can, you know, get lost. Or, yep. You know, maybe that's for younger players who
are bad, you know, at video games, not, yes.
Yeah, I was going to say maybe not as confident in navigating the island, but sure, we'll go with the little kids who, you know, little scrubs who need to get good. But over time, the Nook phone will receive updates and new apps, or if you go on the internet, people have added in their own apps, which I won't go into detail here because we try to keep things family friendly, but there have been some... some interesting dating apps, shall we say, that people have edited into the Nook phone. Moving on. Just each day begins with
KK
a
sliding
radio
into
announcement.
Your DMs.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. But, yeah, each day begins with a radio announcement from Tom Nook about the latest events and some tips about how to go about your island life and that sort of thing, which I think there was, you know, with the Direct, it was presented a lot of it in the way of how Nook would, you know, present his sort of daily little, you know, Tom Nook propaganda sort of thing, getting on his soapbox and his microphone through the PA system. And my favourite thing that I saw on the internet for this was for the Danganronpa players out there that someone had edited the text of Tom Nook to say, "A body has been discovered." So that's a niche reference there, depending if you've played Danganronpa or not.
But I've not seen that it, one, but it's genius.
That one particularly tickled my funny bone. So,
oh my God.
Anyways, on to the next more serious point.
Man, oh yeah. All right, all on that note, yes, I've got the next one here. Something that I noticed as well that I'm really excited by is the level of house customization that's available in the game. So, you know, in previous games, you're always able to put in furniture and shuffle it around, but it's always been a bit of an arduous task. Like, you have to actually go to each individual thing, press A, and then it just rotates one, you know, one quarter of a clockwise at a time. But now you can entirely shift things by going into like an edit mode. So, you know, you can click on an item and it just clicks and drags to wherever you want to, which is really, really good, really useful, particularly if you just have a lot of junk like I do, just posters and statues and crap. But what I thought was really interesting as well is the ability to, so if you have like, you know, a whole bunch of ornaments hanging on the wall or, you know, photos and things like that, you can just click and drag against the wall and make multiple selections at once and then shift everything down, you know, wherever you want to. So thankfully, things are really streamlining with this. Now, I'd never played Animal Crossing Happy Home Designer. Have any of you guys have? Is this a feature that carries over from that game?
It is, but it's much expanded from that. So Happy Home Designer did have that sort of like, you know, the free moving home edit mode. So, you know, you could pick things up and all of that, and you didn't have to physically be in the house and rotate items and stuff like that. But like, it was basically just the floor space that you were dealing with there. And as we've seen, you can like do that on the walls and, you know, click and drag multiple items. So like it's a much, much expanded version of that.
Yeah. As soon as I saw this, like, it just reminded me of The Sims in a way, just, you know, finally Nintendo's catching up in a way to 20 years ago. There's also a photo mode, where, you know, you can arrange yourself inside your home and do funny little snaps and things like that, which is kind of cute, I thought. I feel like a lot of people are going to take advantage of that and maybe even play out their own Danganronpa fantasies. All right, next up, who's got this one?
That would be me. So I just want to, like, briefly go over, like, Nook Miles, because, like, that's probably what you're going to be working towards for most of your gameplay, I would say. So it's basically, like, a sort of a daily quests kind of thing. You have a whole bunch of stamp cards, and by completing things like, you know, collecting a certain amount of wood or whatever, you earn points for that. So it gives you something to actually work towards, because like previous Animal Crossing games, they're absolutely wonderful, but it's sort of just go at your own pace, do whatever you want. And I know a lot of people can find that a bit paralyzing, because there's so much to do, and like, what do you do? What do you work towards? So that's the thing. But with Nook Miles, you can do all sorts of things. As mentioned before, you can buy new hairstyles, which is just awesome. and you can also travel to random islands. So this is sort of like, if you're not playing online, you won't be able to, you know, go to other islands and like other people's islands and get fruits and stuff. Well, that's how it previously would have been. But now you can... you can use your Nook Miles to travel to random islands to find other fruits and, you know, materials that might not exist on your island, and meet new characters. And, you know, if you've got a space for them back on your island, potentially even invite them back, which I mean, it's just, it's a small thing. But
well, to go further into that. So as you were mentioning, like, you know, in previous entries, we would need to go to other people's islands to collect, you know, other people's fruits and things like that, and then take them back to your island, plant those fruits and make those fruits on your available on your island in the form of like growing new trees and things. And that was a big part of earning, big part of earning money in those games was to get these other fruits and start replicating them yourselves, which would then, you know, have more value. So this kind of plays into that a little bit.
Yeah. And like, it's just, I think we're seeing sort of like kind of similar things with the Welcome Amiibo update to New Leaf. You had sort of like similar quests that would be refreshed daily, and they would give you tickets to spend on other things. But I think it's really going to give a lot of life to the game, just in the long run, because like it can be really frustrating to really not have anything to do, because you know all you can really do is catch bugs for a while, you know, save up money to pay off your house. So actually having like all these tasks is
too close to real life.
Yeah. I think it's going to add a lot of gameplay, or a lot of time to the gameplay, rather.
Yeah, I've got another point here as well. So going back to what I was talking about before with multiplayer and stuff, I haven't got this highlighted, but I'll just jump onto it now. Up to 4 players can play locally on one island, as I mentioned before. When it comes to playing in local multiplayer, one person is assigned a leader, and that person leads the various tasks that you'd be doing. So everyone would sort of follow that person on one screen and, you know, go out and collect fruit or sell items and things. But then that can be switched around, so another person can be elected the leader. So in terms of like local multiplayer, like it's not like you just go off and do your own thing. Like everyone is sort of working towards a similar sort of goal at a time.
Yeah, and it seems like the leader is going to be the one that basically controls where the screen is, because everybody is, right, you know, yeah, confined to the one screen. So I think that'll probably move with whoever is assigned the leader. But a good segue from multiplayer is that the Nintendo Switch Online app is actually being used for something else. It's a service called Nook Link, and it's kind of similar to, you know, Super Smash World, I think it was called, and Splatnet for Splatoon 2, where, you know, you can obviously voice chat with other people in the app, but you can also, you know, do a like a type your messages in, and I think that's just fantastic, because having to type it all in on the Switch's keyboard would be absolutely horrendous. But you can also scan QR codes to transfer texture designs from Animal Crossing New Leaf and Happy Home Designer, which is just a really a nice little bit of, you know, connectivity between those two games. Because, I mean, a lot of people spent, you know, hours and hours and hours making, you know, new clothing designs and you know, artwork for their house and stuff. So the fact that, like, all of those QR codes are now completely compatible with New Horizons is just fantastic. Because, I mean, it lets you bring a little piece of your old island to your new island, and who's going to say no to that?
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. One point that I was really actually surprised by, so everything else seemed kind of nice and was good that they were making progress in that regard, but something that actually properly wowed me was how great the museums look now. Like,
well, you can, yeah, like for you can, real.
Yeah, you can walk in and like, you know, a museum looks like a museum. Then it just looked like, you know, these just random little bones on a display or anything like that. Like, you know, when you bring in pieces of like an Apatosaurus or something like that, or whatever dinosaurs they have in there, like they actually seem to be relatively to scale. Like you can walk beneath these, like literally beneath between the legs of dinosaur exhibits and things, or bones that are on exhibit. And the aquarium looks amazing as well. Like if you go there, you can actually see like sharks, like that look like sharks, and fish swimming in schools. And all these elaborate like giant fish tanks and things. And, you know, they've got like a little butterfly exhibit where you can go in there and just be surrounded by butterflies and things like that. It was really amazing to see. I'm really keen on this kind of thing. And something else that was interesting is that their fossils can also be exhibited outdoors as well. Like they had a small snippet of someone setting up a fossil display outside of the museum that you could just put anywhere you wanted, which is also really, really cool. And following on from that, there will also be seasonal events, which will be in the form of updates. So in previous games, you know, the games have always had these events on the cartridge pretty much. And to access them, you could either just wait till that date rolls around in real time, or people would do what's called time traveling, where they would go into their system settings, change the date, and then suddenly it would be Christmas, even though it's, you know, in the middle of winter or something like that here. Which is interesting because at least from what I, how I see this, is that the seasonal updates will be DLC. Therefore, you wouldn't be able to actually time travel necessarily to be able to, you know, engage in something like Easter or something like that, because the content would be downloaded in the form of updates. It would only be available for that certain time, which is sort of some similar to what online games are doing now, like, you know, your World of Warcraft or, you know, Overwatch or games like that, where you would have to download seasonal updates, or Fortnite and things. So I don't know. How do you guys feel about that? Are you guys time travelers in your games? Do you like go back and forth and pissed off Mr. Rossetti?
I mean, sometimes. primarily just because, like, there are some things that are just sort of locked to certain events, and I think that's going to be less likely in this game just because you can't do that. But I think it's a really interesting idea to have them as part of free updates, because it kind of means that, like, they can surprise us.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point.
Because, I mean, like, you know, New Leaf came out back in 2013, and, like, within about an hour, we knew every event in the game. So, you know, we could see, you know, new events that we haven't seen before and stuff like that. But, like, I think probably the most interesting part is that it kind of, like, paves the way for them to have different events between years. So, like, you know, we have Bunny Day is the first event, which is like an Easter analog, but like Bunny Day this year could be completely different from Bunny Day next year or the year after. And that's not something that could really previously happen, because, you know, while the 3DS did have updates, it wasn't really utilized that much because, you know, it was not an ideal situation. But now that, like, Nintendo's gone all in on frequent updates and post-launch content, I think we could see some really interesting things happening with those events and see how they'll change over time.
Yeah, that's a great point, actually. I hadn't considered that, you know, year by year, the seasonal events could be different. That would be really interesting.
Or unless they adopt the approach of Overwatch, as you mentioned, Angelo, and just do the same event year in, year out and bore the hell out of the players. But no, I think that's a really good idea. And as far as the time traveling aspect, I could never be bothered doing that. So there's a petty little part of me that's sort of like, yes, everyone has to experience things at the same time as I do. So I think it'll probably actually help me feel a little bit more connected to the community and the game, because I honestly cannot be bothered doing the time skipping or time traveling, because I'm not a hardcore Animal Crossing player. So I think seasonal events coming in the form of updates and being more of an online connected game, I think will give me more reason and will entice me to keep returning to, you know, checking in on how my island's going and that sort of thing. So I see that as a positive. And I think, you know, moving on to the next point is that one of the big things is, and I think this was, if you've ever played with siblings or close ones who love to get all up in your grill, that when inviting friends to your island, only the ones that are added to that you've nominated specifically as adding them to a best friends list, only those people can use tools or make alterations to your island, whether it's digging up holes, chopping trees, all that sort of stuff. So if you're that worried about your sibling, which my partner and her sister, I know that they would troll the hell out of each other. So I think they're going to be on some pretty strict conditions and not add each other as best friends in Animal Crossing so that they can't sabotage each other's island. So I think it's, you know, it's a good introduction, because, you know, especially, you know, this is a family game, and, you know, it sort of helps establish some of those boundaries between, you know, if you're playing with siblings or, you know, relatives or, you know, close, you know, friends and that sort of stuff, and you're particularly careful about how you've arranged your island painstakingly, then you can maintain your creative control.
What I want to know about that, though, is that, like, is that going to prevent, like, non-best friends from, like, running through my flowers and ruining them? because I spend a lot of time placing flowers into my town, and when I invite somebody in and they run through my flowers and kill half of the ones that I've spent like 2 months breeding to be the perfect flower, it kind of, you know, gets a bit annoying.
I hope that's included. Not the running through and destroying flowers, but I hope that, you know, people who are not designated as best friends can't ruin your gardening.
Well, the easy answer to that, Ollie, is that they would be the first killed off in Danganronpa New Horizons. So,
yeah. Touché.
Going back a little bit here, something that was that is a bit of a game changer, I think, in the way that how you navigate your island is the way that you can now alter the terrain in your island. So no longer are you, you know, do you pick an island and you're just stuck with the layout of that island. So, you know, at the beginning of the game, you're given an option of, you know, a handful of different layouts. But then over time, you're able to actually change things up. So previously, we were able to just, you know, earn enough money and then or bells and just pay for a bridge or something like that. But there would only be in very specific spots. But now you can actually pay for bridges and slopes, you know, or stairs or whatever to reach higher levels much sooner in the game and widely available in the sense that you could put them wherever you want. But as you get into the game, you can actually get what's called an island designer construction permit, which allows you to create paths, textures for sand or dirt and things like that. But you can even sculpt rivers, like new rivers or waterfalls and things and new cliffs. So you can really change up how your island looks overall, which is really kind of cool. I don't know. How do you guys feel about this? Like, I mean, people are complaining that you can't have access to multiple islands, like, you know, on one system and stuff. But this kind of allows you to change things up whenever you want to, in a way.
Yeah, I'm really excited really to see what the community does with that, because I'm imagining, you know, things that, like, you know, you have a floating city or like an archipelago where like you have a series of smaller islands and, you know, bridges connecting them, and or like, you know, maybe I can have a moat around my house. That would be cool. Like,
oh my god, that'd be amazing.
So like I think it's a really great feature, because like, you know, once if you're playing like New Leaf, once you pick an island, you're kind of stuck with it forever. And like, because you can just completely change the entire look and feel of it, and you know, you can move around houses and shops and all of that stuff as well. So like, you can there's just so much customization potential here that like it's hard to see it as anything but a fantastic thing.
Yeah, but Chris, will you be creating like mass graves for your pets that you no longer deem worthy to survive with you on the island?
Well, I'm normally in games with a lot of creative tools and features. I'm not one to engage with a lot of that stuff because I'm not super good at it, or you know, I've never really invested the time in. But I do enjoy what other people do. But in this case, I may have no option but to try and recreate the island from Danganronpa 2.
Great stuff. This gag is not getting old at all. I'm loving it so much. But
I wonder if our listeners will think the same.
Probably not. I apologize. Ollie, bring us home with this final point here, which has been a widely discussed topic amongst
So something maybe a little less positive and interesting. Nintendo's sort of been flip-flopping all over this issue, but we know that it doesn't have that Animal Crossing New Horizons won't have the regular cloud save backups option. At some indeterminate point in the future, you will be able to restore your save. Now, in the direct, when it aired, it did say that you could only be restored once. Since then, they've pulled all the uploads of the direct and re-uploaded them, saying that like more information will be released in the future. And it's hard to know if like that was because, you know, that was the wrong information, or because they're, you know, paying attention to consumer reactions. Because I mean, we saw it with Super Mario Maker 2, where, you know, they fully intended to have online play be, you know, random players only, but after that sort of fan backlash over it, they did change course, and that's a good thing for a company to be doing, but it's really hard to know at this point. The other thing is that we were told previously that you wouldn't be able to transfer your island or your player from one console to another. That has also changed as of the direct and information that was uploaded to the various Nintendo websites. So at some point, again, in the indeterminate future after release, you will be able to transfer your island and probably your player as well between consoles. We don't know how that's going to work yet, but like, it's probably safe to assume that it's going to be through some sort of app that is like separate, like an island transfer tool or something. But I mean, this could all change by the time this episode releases, and it could change again by the time you're listening to it. So, I mean, it's very much a developing story, and I think it's going to continue being a developing story for quite a while. It seems a little bit like Nintendo doesn't really know what they're doing on this front.
Yeah, it's weird. It doesn't seem like the restriction that they've placed makes any sort of sense, really. I mean, like, if the events are going to be seasonal anyways, I mean, I can understand if they want to somehow do this to prevent people from doing something like time traveling and essentially cheating the game and things. But even then, like, why would it matter? You know, if people want to do that, they should be able to do that. But they've put up a solution now where seasonal events are only, or for the most part, are accessible via DLC, like free DLC. So putting on this kind of restriction doesn't really make any sense anyway. I'm just not sure what they're trying to achieve by doing this.
So, like, the prevailing theory isn't that, like, they want to do this, but that, like, they have to. Just because it's a shared island thing, and because it is one console per island, it means that the save data is tied to the console as opposed to any particular user. And, you know, like, there could be discrepancies between, like, one user saves it up to their cloud, and, like, another user saves a completely different backup, and then, like, when it comes to restore it, you could overwrite another player's save data. So it's like, it's one of those things where it's like, it's just, I think primarily because of the way that the Switch does handle saves, that like, they're running into so many issues with how to handle them now.
Yeah. And yeah, it's just, again, it's just interesting because by having some sort of what they would probably call a feature, you know, having everyone share one island, in that case, if this theory is true, then it ruins the entire point of having something like a Nintendo Online subscription in the first place. I mean, sure, you can play online and things like that. You can play with friends, but at the same time, one of the really important features is save data. For example, I've got a friend of mine, excuse me again, who had their house broken into late last year in October, and all of their video games were stolen, like their Switch and everything was stolen. And thankfully, she's part of a family plan that I have with a bunch of friends for Nintendo Switch Online. And yeah, she was able to retrieve all of her save games and things like that with no worries. But like, even with something like Animal Crossing, where you can do that, but only once, or like in this instance, that feature only becomes available later in the year. Like, that's a real issue, at least I think.
Yeah, and it's a lot to ask of players to just, like, you know, hold on and don't lose or have your console stolen. Like, just,
well, that's until out of your control it's anyway. Ready.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's way too much to say, like, hey, just don't lose your console until we have this tool ready, because like, this tool should have been there at day one. Like, it's really weird messaging, and it's really weird optics around the situation. They just, it looks a lot like they're just sort of reacting and not making any choices other than, like, you know, what are these people saying? Like, how are people reacting to what we're saying? So yeah, it's a bizarre situation, and like, it's given us a lot of headaches on like trying to report on it, because, you know, we report on it and then that news spreads, and then, you know, some minor detail changes, but it changes the entire messaging of it all. So like, then we have to get that message out somehow, and, you know, we're at the algorithms of the internet as to how far that message spreads. So it's very frustrating, and I wish they would
frustrating
just
is definitely the word.
Come up with something and stick to it, and hopefully, you know, come up with something with the input of fans, because I feel like a lot of this could have been avoided if they just like focus grouped a little more, you know, asked people of you know, players of different backgrounds and levels of interest, like what they expect from these kinds of things, and then sort of stick to it. But yeah.
Yeah. Frustrating times. Anywho, unless there's anything else that anyone wants to add about Animal Crossing, Chris, do you have anything that you'd like to follow up with?
No, I think we've been super comprehensive.
Oh, I just want to mention that all the amiibo cards are supported from previous games, which means that all 383 villages will be returning on top of new ones. So, yeah. The only ones that won't be returning are the ones that were exclusive to the Sanrio Hello Kitty special amiibo cards. But I'm assuming that's just a licensing thing anyway, so, you know, what can you do?
Yeah, and well, with that, let's depart New Horizons and let's move on to games that we're currently playing. So, Chris, why don't you start us off, because you've got the big review of the week for our site.
Yeah, so I reviewed the console port of Two Point Hospital, specifically the Switch version, obviously, but it also released, or will be releasing, on Xbox One and PS4 at the same time. So Two Point Hospital, those who played Theme Hospital back in the day, which I admit was not me, but I do know it has quite the cult following. It's made by much of the same folks who are now working for a studio called Two Point Studios. And yeah, it came out on PC, I think it was originally in 2018. And I'm very, very pleased to report that the Switch port of Two Point Hospital is fantastic. It's other than not being able to use the luxury of a keyboard and mouse to, you know, have full modular control over what you're doing, and, you know, a little bit more precision with your movement and moving your cursor around. Two Point Hospital on Switch is brilliant. It's very, very silly. It's got a very British sense of humor that punches up. There's a lot of hospital systems and gameplay elements to learn, but it has a really, really good learning curve and a really good interactive sort of tutorial woven into the game itself. So I never felt overwhelmed, whereas previous simulation games that I've played, I do find quite daunting and difficult to get into, whereas Two Point Hospital was complete opposite. It was really welcoming and really introduces the challenge and all of its gameplay elements in a really natural and smooth way. So I always felt like I was, you know, equipped with the knowledge I needed at the time that I needed it. And yeah, of course, the challenge did bump up, but then I realized when things went wrong, it was entirely my fault when I had an entire ward of patients die. I forgot to give them enough food and water to keep them occupied between appointments, so that didn't work out so well. But I played I'm going to say upwards of 90% of my time in handheld, and the performance, buttery smooth. Didn't notice a single slowdown, drop in frame, or I didn't experience any crashes whatsoever. So, yeah, Two Point Studios and Red Kite Games, who handled the port, they've done a ripping job of the Switch version of Two Point Hospital. So, would absolutely recommend.
That's great. Well, I was talking to you earlier before the show, and I mentioned that Two Point Hospital is also coming to Xbox Game Pass, so people who have a subscription to that won't need to pay for a version of the game. And I mentioned that to you, how I'm in a bit of a dilemma as to whether or not to get the Switch version or the Xbox version. But in your experience, which would you recommend? Do you think it's worth paying for on the Switch, or just to stick to the Xbox?
I'm a shameless Xbox Game Pass shill. I think it's a fantastic service and great value. Absolutely. So for those who, you know, if you don't have a Switch, in which case, thank you for listening, but I'm curious as to where your interests lie. Game Pass, get it on Game Pass. However, the allure of playing Two Point Hospital in handheld when it performs as well as it does, it's a strong pull. So if you really want to play this on the couch, you know, laying down, or you're in bed as a bit of a relaxing thing before you go to sleep, then, yeah, have complete confidence that playing Two Point Hospital in handheld is perfectly fine. So yeah, it's a pretty easy sell on any platform.
Cool. Do you know how much it is on Switch?
I'm not sure what it is digitally, but I did see for Australians, you can pick up the physical copy on all consoles for $49, which I think is terrific value for how much game there is. And yeah, there's no Switch tax at JB, so it's all the same on all consoles, which is really positive.
Wow. Okay. How odd.
I would definitely suggest going that route as well, because it is $60 on the Australian eShop. It is
go JB, $60 go to $49 bucks.
Yeah, for sure. It is $60 on other platforms as well, so it's not like, you know, Switch is getting the raw end of the deal here. But I mean, yeah, just go physical. It's going to be much more better value.
Cool. All right. Is that it for you, Chris?
Yeah, as far as review games, other than that, in my own time, I've recently discovered the MMO stylings of Final Fantasy XIV. So goodbye, spare time.
Awesome. All right.
Oh, just imagine one day if that comes to Switch, though. None of us are getting anything done.
Oh, my word. But yes, if you're looking for an MMO to get into, it's well worth it. And actually, just very, very quickly, I've started watching the NoClip documentary on sort of the death and rebirth of Final Fantasy XIV, because that was a game that launched in a very bad state, but actually through a lot of feedback, reiteration, and a complete overhaul and relaunch, it's actually turned out to be, I think, the second most subscribed to MMO currently, which is no small feat. And I mention that because, you know, that's an example of a company, you know, actively listening to player feedback and implementing it in a really good and positive way. So hopefully that's something that we see Nintendo continue to do with the likes of Animal Crossing, New Horizons and games in the future. And hopefully it lets them sort of predict some of these issues before they actually occur, so we don't have the confusion over, you know, porting things over to different platforms or switching villages or islands and that sort of stuff. So we avoid this whole mess in the first place.
Yeah, good point. Ollie, you're up. You also had a review this week.
I did. So I reviewed Level 5's Snack World. It's got a much longer title that I can never remember. but it's an enhanced sort of, I want to say remaster, because it's definitely not the same game, of like a 3DS game that was previously Japan only. And the Switch port, it came to Japan in like late 2018, and then just all of 2019 didn't get localized. But it's out now. It's just so much fun. So it's a dungeon crawler, kind of like Diablo, but also like much lower stakes. It has just this ridiculous story where like half of it is you're just, you know, doing errands for a stuck up princess that can't be bothered going outside. And like, I will say, despite its ridiculously cutesy art style, it is loaded with just gigantic amounts of sexual references and innuendo. It's not what you'd expect from Level 5, you know, the people that brought you Professor Layton, but my goodness, it is surprising. I mean, like, it just, the level of humor that we're working with here, like, the game starts off with, like, you being hauled into a kingdom after, like, passing out, and, like, the king of that kingdom, you know, says, oh, you know, I should have built a wall to keep the foreigners out, like that other leader. And then, like, that's like your first exposure to the game, and then it just keeps going with these just crazy references. Like, there's a cafe called like the Kofefi Cafe, and it's like, who approved this localization? I mean, you know, there's these like these genies that are like kind of quite openly gay, and just they lean hard into that. It's just one of those things.
They seem horny on main.
Yeah, I mean, like, and like, those are the screenshots that I was allowed to publish. Like, there were much, much more overt things. I mean, like, just to give an example of the kind of things that happens here, you're tasked, one of your earliest quests is you're supposed to go to this dungeon which has a kraken called the Krappen, in order to get this perfume that it apparently sells. And like, when you defeat the Krappen and ask it for its perfume, you're treated to this wonderful 30-second scene of a Krappen squatting over a bottle and grunting. And it's like, what is going on here? But like, it's so bizarre. It's just like the tone of the game is just completely different from the art style, but it somehow comes together and works, and it's got bite-sized missions, and it's just a really fantastic game. Also has online multiplayer, which I tried with Paul, who reviewed it for Maxi Geek, and it is just completely flawless. Drop in, drop out. You can't do all the missions together, but there's like a good deal of missions you can do, and it's just, it's a lot of fun and deeply weird, and I think that's a really good combination to strike.
Has it got local multiplayer or just online?
It does have local multiplayer as well, but it's only like multiple console, so it's not like single screen multiplayer.
Gotcha. Yes, this looks delightfully filthy, so I'm definitely going to get on this.
Ollie, between this and Deponia, I'm so confused about which games you're assigned.
I mean, it's mostly just that looks interesting without like any further research. I mean, that's how I pick my games. It's like I take a look at the trailer and like if it looks interesting enough to grab it, I'll grab it. I mean, sometimes it ends up being just absolutely delightful with, you know, Snack World, and then other times I, you know, want to jump in front of a train with Deponia. So like it's one of those things where it's like, you know, you kind of have to roll the dice sometimes to get to interesting experiences.
See, I didn't know anything about Snack World whatsoever, and I was kind of like, oh, this looks like kind of a nothing kind of game, but you just dropping all of that on me really has me kind of regretting that I didn't look into this game sooner.
Yeah, as I said, it's extremely weird, and I don't know, like, who approved the localization, and, like, it's being distributed by Nintendo in the West as well, so it's like, not only did, like, Level 5 develop this, and, like, the first, like, sort of clue that maybe the game was a little bit different in the West was, like, it got the equivalent of a G rating in Japan, and then here it got an M rating. And it's like, well, why did that happen?
That's a wide bit.
And then I got into it, and it's like, but like it also it's filled with puns. Like the main villain of the game is called Salt and Vinegar, and he's a Sultan of the Vinegar Kingdom. And it's just, it's like, I kind of feel like they spent that entire year coming up with like sexual innuendo and like horrible puns. So, to
your knowledge, Ollie, does the Japanese version have the same level of vulgarity, or did the localization team add that as a point of difference to sell it to the West?
From my understanding is that like it's not overtly vulgar. It's like it's more like you know, a little bit like the Shrek films, where like it's a seemingly innocent thing that like you can read into it if you want. So like, you know how the Shrek films have jokes that are like made for the adults that are taking their kids to see it. It's a little bit like that in Japan, but like over here apparently they just decided to go all out and lay all the cards on the table in just the most spectacular way.
Well, dang. Kudos. All right then, Snack World, go get it. All right, what else have you been playing there, Ollie?
I've also been playing Assassin's Creed 3 Remastered on Switch. It's on sale at the moment, which we'll get into a little bit later, but I feel like Assassin's Creed 3 is one of those games that gets a really bad rap because it has a slow start, and it does have a very slow start. Like, it's 18 hours before you actually get into the real game part, which is, you know, I can understand why that's frustrating, but I mean, like, even when it launched on Switch, it got a bit of a bad rap because it was a little bit unpolished at the time. But they've done a lot of updates to it since, and I decided, you know what, I'm gonna take the plunge. It also comes with all of the DLC. It comes with Assassin's Creed Liberation HD, which was previously a Vita game that I never got to play because I didn't have a Vita when it came out. So I don't know. I thought I'd give it a go. And, you know, maybe if it's worth writing about, I'll write about it again.
Cool. Yeah. All right. Well, I'm sorry to say that the game that I've been reviewing has been nothing anywhere near as exciting as the two that you guys have been doing. So I've been playing Last Encounter on Switch, which is an indie game out of Silesia Games. Exordium Games, published by Silesia Games. It's a top-down twin-stick shooter. Very cliche. The humanity is on the brink of collapse. You've got to fly around and shoot aliens, blah, 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 blah. I've had this game for a little while that's been assigned to me, but unfortunately I've been working, doing a whole lot of rehearsals and things like that for the Adelaide Fringe, for a couple of shows that I'm in, plus with work on top of that as well. So I haven't had much time to do it, but also in the times that I have had moments free, like I just haven't really wanted to play this game. It's just not a particularly interesting game, unfortunately, but I will try to have the review out this week, but it's not really one that's particularly interesting. There are other better twin stick shooters out there. But other than that, I picked up Final Fantasy VII on the Switch. I remembered that, you know, a whole bunch of Final Fantasy games came out a little while ago on Switch. And it was really good to jump back into this one. I think it was only like $23 or something, so not too expensive. Yeah, I never actually finished it like 10 years ago when I started playing it properly. So I had it years before that, you know, on PC and things, just downloaded it legally because I was a dumb teenager, but I never really finished it. And then I got it on PS3 and again, never got to the finish. I got close to the end, but I got to a point where I just couldn't proceed because I wasn't a high enough level. But it's been really good playing this one, because I don't know if you guys have played the Final Fantasy remasters or re-releases or whatever on Switch, but there are some really good quality of life improvements to this where you can go through battles, and if you click the left stick, you can actually play the game at 3 times the speed. So dialogue moves faster, you run faster, all those things. Battles move faster, which is so good, and so much more convenient. If you click the right stick, basically makes you invulnerable. It's like God mode, and you constantly get your limit meter up, so you can just keep, you know, doing really heavy hits on enemies and things, and your health just keeps regenerating, which is great again because, you know, the save points are so few and far between. So if you die, you have to go all the way back. But this just makes it so much easier and so much less time consuming, rather. Or if you click both sticks together, you don't have to go through any random battles at all. You can just fly straight through from story beat to story beat, which is really cool. So some really good quality of life measures in there, which I very much appreciate, being such quite a lengthy RPG. But I've also been playing Kingdom Hearts on PS4 with my girlfriend. We recently finished Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order finally. So we've been getting into our next game to play through together. It's been Kingdom Hearts. We wanted to get back into this game for a long time. So I didn't really grow up with a PlayStation myself. I was always a Nintendo and Sega kid, and then got an Xbox, and then my sister got a PlayStation afterwards. So that whole like two generation section of Japanese RPGs from Square and stuff completely, you know, went past me. So it's kind of cool going back to these ones now, and I'm really keen on finally getting through the entire series of Kingdom Hearts. So,
and there's a lot of it.
Oh, there's a lot of it, and I'm already well aware that none of it makes sense, but it seems good so far. You know, hanging out with Goofy and Donald, so whatever. Just flying around, getting into capers. All right, let's go into the Vooks eShop recommendations of the fortnight. So last week, there was actually quite a big blockbuster sale that just kind of sprung up. We were kind of keeping our eye on it. You especially, Ollie, were keeping an eye on it. There were some rumblings a couple of days beforehand. But yeah, it finally happened. There are some significant sales on Nintendo games. You know, I think it's like 30 to 50% off on a lot of them. Mario Maker 2, Fire Emblem, Three Houses, among others. Mario & Rabbids is another pretty good one, which is down to like $22 or something. But for me, my recommendations go to some smaller games. So Yoku's Island Express is currently $9, which is 66% off. That game is an absolute banger. If no one's ever played it, it is so good. It's essentially like a Metroidvania, but instead of running around and jumping and things like that, the entire world is similar to a pinball table. And the way that you jump and traverse is by getting onto like little flippers that you would get in a pinball table, and you flip yourself around and stuff. It is so good. And you play as a little dung beetle who rolls around a little ball. It's so good. Such a good game.
And Yoku's Island Express was ahead of the curve with, you know, Untitled Goose Game had a dedicated honk button. Yoku's Island Express had dedicated party horn.
That's right. It does too. Yeah. I've forgotten about that. That's a good point. It's a very good point. And my other recommendation would be Puyo Puyo Tetris, which is down to $18. So it's 70% off. So I think that game is usually like $60 to $70. And I remember when it came out at launch, it was a launch title for the Switch. And I was actually really keen on it, but I was not keen on that price. So good thing I waited 3 years for it to go down to $18. And both of those sales end on March 1. Who's next? Who wants to make the next recommendation?
Yeah, so you mentioned Fire Emblem Three Houses, and if people haven't got onto that yet, I implore you to do so. Fantastic game, probably one of the best games that Nintendo have released on the Switch so far. That one's about, I think, $54 in digital, so that's pretty good value. My recommendations include the newly released Brief Battles, which is an Adelaide-developed game, and it's a little 2D fighter slash, you know, sort of platform challenger sort of thing, and it's very, very cute, a lot of fun, and it looks quite nice, and I played a little bit of it last night. It runs quite nicely, so that one sets you back $21.50 Australian. Another thing I've mentioned is Dark Souls, which I haven't actually got yet, but I'm very, very tempted at 40% off
for $35.95.
Watched a streamer do a Dark Souls run not that long ago, so I'm getting Dark Souls itches, so that might be one I go for. One that I would recommend that I think flew under a lot of people's radars when it released a couple of years ago, Iconoclasts, $14.99, which is 50% off its usual price. It came out not long, sort of in between a period where we had a lot of Metroidvania 2D adventure game types in quick succession, where we had the likes of Hollow Knight and Dead Cells, Iconoclasts, and there are a few others at the same time. Iconoclasts is one that's relatively short by comparison. I think it's closer to between 10 to 15 hours, you know, depending on how thorough you are, which is still a decent amount of game, but it's got a really good and really interesting story, and its presentation is fantastic. So if you've enjoyed the likes of Hollow Knight and are looking for something with a similar sort of gameplay style, then yeah, definitely recommend Iconoclasts. And finally, Dragon Ball FighterZ, or Dragon Ball FighterZ, however you want to say it, is 70% off, $26.95. It's a fantastic fighter game and sort of is part of a generation of fighter games that looks so cool and feels so satisfying to play, but doesn't require mastering super long combos to, you know, actually be decent at it. So, yeah, would recommend those.
Is that the one that has that sort of overworld thing that you have to walk through to different... Like, does that have the storyline where you have to go back into the past and
fix things? No, you're thinking of... Dragon Ball Xenoverse, which is also on Switch and was recently on sale but isn't right now.
So Fighters what's the difference
is
here, then?
Purely just a fighter. It's like a side-facing tag team fighting game. It does have like a story mode, but like it's kind of basic. I don't know. If you're into like proper fighters, Street Fighter or Tekken, then it's 100% going to be up your alley. Like, cool. Even if you're not that interested in Dragon Ball, it's worth picking up for that price.
Cool. All right. Ollie, do you have your own recommendations?
I do. I'm just going to quickly go through the big ones that are on sale, because we are well over our schedule right now.
Yes.
So obviously we've got Daemon X Machina, Dark Souls Remastered, Diablo 3, Doom, obviously Dragon Ball FighterZ. We've got Fire Emblem Three Houses. God Eater 3 is a fantastic game that I don't have time to go into. Hyrule Warriors, L.A. Noire, all of the LEGO games. And just, you know, Super Mario Maker 2, Super Mario Odyssey, Civilization 6 is 50% off, which is great because it's fantastic on Switch. There's so much there. The Witcher, like, even though it only came out relatively recently, is down to like $56. So, like, why not pick it up now?
And that has all the DLC as well.
It does, yeah. My personal recommendation is This War of Mine Complete Edition. It's a game that I played on PC a couple years ago, and it is just an absolutely harrowing and beautiful experience. It's down to $20 from usually $60. So, like, That's my go-to.
Yeah, cool. The blockbuster sale that's currently going on, that ends on March 1 overall, doesn't it?
Yeah, so everything in the blockbuster highlights section on the article all end on the 1st of March. So
for the full comprehensive list, which is quite a doozy. There's a lot of really good stuff on there, not just stuff, but really good stuff as well. Can be found on the on our site, vooks.net. If you just head over to the eShop section, you'll find it. So be sure to check it out. Ollie and Daniel put a lot of effort into collating all of this stuff every week. Right, let's quickly go into the release forecast and finish up. So between now and the next episode, which will be on March 8th, or at least when we're recording March 8th, so we've got February 25th, Two Point Hospital, as reviewed by Chris, comes out. We've also got Mega Man Zero or ZX Legacy Edition, which is just another one of those, collection, which is another one of those collections of Mega Man games from that era, the Mega Man Zero and ZX era. Those are the Game Boy Advance games, right?
Yep. And the ZX is the DS ones that nobody likes, but I think are fantastic.
Fair enough. And then there's also Samurai Showdown, which I'm not familiar with, but Ollie, you are familiar with Samurai Showdown.
Yeah, so Samurai Showdown is one of those classic arcade and eventually console console games that it's a side-scrolling fighter, kind of like Dragon Ball FighterZ, like we mentioned before. But it's developed by SNK, which is obviously a gigantic company for fighting games, and they do fantastic work. And this new game previously came to PS4 and Xbox One. It's now coming to Switch and is like a sort of reboot of the first game and a reboot of the franchise. And apparently if you pre-order, you get the arcade version of the Super Nintendo, the arcade version of the second game in the series, Samurai Showdown 2. So like, you know, why not? Cool. It's a great series. Get into
it. Awesome. All right. So those come out on February 25th. So tomorrow, if the episode releases, or today, whichever day you're listening to it, February 28th are the Metro Redux, is the Metro Redux collection. So that includes Metro 2033 and Last Light, which were sort of under the radar at the time, at least. First-person RPGs in the similar sense to Fallout, but this time, these were based on Russian books, so they're set in Russia, in a post-apocalyptic Russia, where you're navigating like underground metro tunnels and things like that, and trying to escape monsters. And then on March 6th, we have Pokemon Mystery Dungeon Rescue Team DX, which is the remake of the classic Pokemon Mystery Dungeon games from the Game Boy Advance and Nintendo DS era of the mid-2000s. So yeah, be sure to keep a lookout for those games. Anything anyone else wants to add onto those?
I do just want to point out that the Metro Redux game, so 2033 and Last Light, will apparently be sold separately. Not listed as separate entries right now, but we believe that when the games do come out, they will be sold separately. So don't feel like you have to like go all in if you're not 100% sure. Like maybe buy one of them and see how you go.
Cool. All right. Well, on that note, we'll leave things there. We'll see you guys in 2 weeks. Thank you, Ollie. Thank you, Chris. Where can people find you guys on Twitter?
I am on Twitter as Chocobalt, Chocobalt.
And I'm also on Twitter as BibiBoy, BibiBoy.
Cool. And you can find me. I'm at Mangello, MANJELL0. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next fortnight. Bye-bye.
Bye.